College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Well, Saturday can't get here fast enough. For one, I'll be in studio and hopefully over this awful cold. Welcome to a busy Wednesday here on the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Ivan Maisel is going to join us to get his thoughts on Alabama's defense as they continue to be hit with the injury bug. But first, as he does every Wednesday, it's great to have David Pollock with us. And we got a big weekend in a handful of places, including Madison, College Station, as well as your backyard in Athens. What's up, Pollock?
Home games are never a bad thing, Kevin. You've been traveling all over the place and are happy to be in studio on Saturday, but I'm going to be at home. So I get to sleep in my own bed for my only Thursday for college football season and Friday, so I'm pretty daggum excited.
Yeah, I feel sorry for your wife, but we'll talk about that, of course, and get you ready for Friday.
That's true.
And those games. Now, on Monday, Herbie and I discussed a couple teams that stood out from week three, including UCF and Temple, the American having a big weekend. Which team impressed you the most this past weekend?
I tell you what, man, it's always fun to watch early season because we don't know what we don't know yet, you know. And I loved having the out of conference games. I loved having Michigan State and Arizona State, and I loved. Now the ACC did not love having out of conference games this past week. It wasn't a good week for them. And Stanford, brutal week for Stanford. But it's always fun the beginning of the season to kind of see teams and figure out what they are and who they are. And Penn State played Pitt, and you know, Penn State the last couple years have been really, really good, but defensively they haven't been as good. And watching their defense play really well and watching that front seven is pretty legit. It's the best that Franklin has had by far since he's been there. That front seven's really, really good and might challenge Ohio State. But Ohio State obviously had a pretty impressive week. I was probably the most impressed with them from a physical standpoint. Remember, we talk about Ohio State over the last year and a half plus, and they had Bosa, and they had Young, and they had all those cyborg freaks in the trenches that you looked at and you go, good Lord, they're really good looking. And all of a sudden, they couldn't get it together on the back end, and it was miserable, and you saw people carve them up left and right. And watching them this weekend, they really impressed me with the way that they handled their business defensively, the way that they ran the football. They were very, very physical, held Indiana under 250 or 60, 70 yards, something like that, and kept the score under 20, which is really good against an Indiana offense that's good. So the Buckeyes, I think people are going to start talking about them more. Are they in the conversation for being the number one team in the country? Because they're kind of showing that they're that kind of good.
Has that defense made a jump? Because last year they looked really slow in the second and third level. Have they made the jump in your mind where they can match up against the speed with Clemson on the outside and what Alabama has and their speed with those three wide receivers?
Yeah, to me it was more about the second level being their eyes and the safeties with their eyes. It wasn't about as much about athleticism. I don't think they're great at the safety spots from an athletic standpoint. Now, corners, they're freaky. I mean, they got some freaky bodies at corner. They can really, really run. They can tackle. Long, just defensive linemen that are long, physical, look really, really good. But it was just the eye discipline and being able to be gap sound and do the things that, you know, defense is not about unblocked players running and making the play every time. That's not the way defense works. Defense is about you as a linebacker, you spill the ball to where you want it to go. And the safety understanding, like if it's cover three and I'm the fourth player, I understand that if a fullback comes to me or a blocker comes to me, I have to turn that ball inside to my backer. Or I have to spill the ball if I'm an inside backer to my safety and understanding where my help is coming from. It's not about guys just flying up in gaps making tackles. And I think they did a poor job of that. They look more sound this year. They look a lot more sound, have bigger tests down the road. But let's start looking at the offenses that they're going to see in the Big Ten, Kevin. Penn State is not close to what they've been in the past, not even close. Michigan State is what they've been in the past, which is not good. So that's not going to be a good thing. Yeah. Michigan is not very good up front, and they're not very good on offense. Who are they fearful in the Big Ten that's going to score a bunch of points? Wisconsin is a team that's going to make you play sound and make you play discipline and test that security, but they don't have the speed on the outside to really stretch you. So the Buckeyes, I think, are looking pretty good in the Big Ten.
That's a fair point, too, because they got Nebraska in prime time next week, Miami of Ohio over the weekend. But then Michigan State, you're not making a case for that offense, which is god-awful right now.
Nope.
Northwestern, I'm sorry. You mentioned Wisconsin. Nope. Maryland, maybe in November, we'll see what Maryland is at, and maybe at the end of the season, Penn State can figure things out offensively consistently, as well as Michigan at the end of the year. So you're right, the way the schedule sets up for them, they could be peaking at the right time facing these teams in November, the way this defense has played out. We're going to get your thoughts on that Penn State defense in a moment, but I want to go to the SEC here real quick. You have an interesting perspective on how you view the top three teams and their style of play, and those top three teams right now are Alabama, Georgia, and LSU. What separates this trio when you look at them individually on the offensive side?
Well, I'm just curious who's going to win the SEC this year. Is it going to be a Big 12 team or an SEC team? And I say that because when you – yeah, you heard me. You heard me correctly. You heard me. See, what happened was when you look at Alabama and you look at LSU and you look at their styles of play right now, lack of running game, throw the ball 30, 40 times a game, what are we used to seeing that from? That's used to be in the Big 12. That's what they do. They spread the ball around and throw it all over the yard. You don't have a run game, so you don't belong in the conversation as being one of the best teams. Well, who's the difference? Georgia. Georgia's the old school SEC team. They're going to literally line up with two tights and they're going to smash you in the mouth. They make no bones about it that they are going to be physical and play action off of it. Alabama and LSU are pass first offenses. They are completely shift to what they used to be. So, how intriguing is this going to be? We got the Big 12 within the SEC, and it's going to be really, really fun. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to watch Auburn develop. I don't think their firepower is good enough with a true freshman quarterback, and I don't think they're good enough up front offensive line. I know they're a bunch of experience to push people around and just and absolutely out-maul people. What is A&M going to have to say about it? Like, it's going to be a fun conference to watch, but the three top teams, I think it's really interesting that two of them are Big 12-type teams.
Okay, now what's behind that in your mind this specific year? Is it because of the quarterback play and the talent that they have in the backfield? Or is it because you look back there with Georgia and you got DeAndre Swift and he could separate himself when it comes to running back play when you talk about LSU and Alabama?
Well, LSU now, I mean, Najee Harris ain't no scrub.
Oh, and I'm not knocking him.
That dude's an
animal. But I'm also talking about Tua Tagovailoa and his skill set throwing the football.
But look who he has to throw to. I mean, it's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even fair. I mean, you just have way more – if I'm going to pass the football consistently, I got way more chances to make big plays. I mean, look at those guys that I can throw it out wide to. I mean, we barely mentioned Ruggs, and he's a 4-2 guy, 4-3 guy. I mean, it just catches the ball and can take it to the house at any point. So, I think they have a skill on the outside that's really good. I just would say that I would be disturbed of watching LSU and Alabama both because – there is no ground game right now. There is no punching people in the mouth and moving people off the ball and getting 4 yards and getting 5 yards. I mean, listen, if Georgia can line up and pound the football and eat clock and keep it away from those other guys, you don't have to worry about us getting as many stops and covering guys as long as you need to. You can keep guys fresh. So it's going to be an interesting style battle, but it's just strange, I guess, to watch Alabama and LSU not really have a good run game, but both of them are freaky explosive in the pass game, and they're more than compensating for it.
Will this change in your mind as the season progresses, especially when you look at the talent that Alabama has and what Alabama can do?
It should. It should change up front for Alabama. I feel like Alabama up front is good enough and physical enough to be a better run team, and they should be a better run team. Right now, what I see from LSU, and again, they can get some guys back from, albeit suspension or injury on the offensive line. I don't foresee them pushing people around at any point this season. This is going to be a Joe Burrow throw it around the yard a lot of times with a system that, here's the fun thing too, Kevin, as the year goes on, we know what you do more. And where's your counterpunch and where's your answers? There are no answers to getting punched in the face, Kevin. Like, if you line up, Kevin, and you just knock me in the face and I can't do anything about it, there isn't an answer to that. But if you scheme me up, and right now you're killing me in the intermediate passing game and you're killing me here and next, I can try to take some of that stuff away. So that to me will be the interesting thing. I think Alabama has a better chance to get their run game going, but LSU, as long as Joe Burrow is getting the ball out and making his reads quick and his playmakers are making big plays, I think that's more of the style offense you're going to see from them because they don't have the guys up front I've seen to push people around.
And then we'll talk a little bit more in depth about Georgia on Friday as they match up against Notre Dame. But I want to get your quick thoughts about, you know, all the talk before the season about Georgia and the wide receivers and losing all that talent and what are they going to do. Have you seen any type of drop-off in this offense with Jake Fromm and making sure the passing game is still intact?
I haven't seen a drop-off yet, but let's be honest. Arkansas State wasn't going to show me that. You know, I mean,
No. So
I think this is a great week for Georgia because it's not Arkansas State, it's not Murray State, and it's not Vanderbilt. Now, Vanderbilt's a pretty good defense, but here's the thing I love about Notre Dame's defense. They're going to make you earn it most of the time. They're not a team that's out of spot or out of gap all the time. They're very fundamentally sound. And when I watch them, I start with number 11, Gilman, the safety. He's a transfer from years ago. Last year, I remember watching this cat in the Michigan game. I was like, God, I love this dude. And he's an instinctive football player that will absolutely hit you in the mouth. I think both edge players and three or four edge players for Notre Dame is really, really good. You look at their best player on defense, to me, is Troy Pride Jr. at cornerback, number 5. When you watch him, really, really good football player. Now, how do I attack the defense of Notre Dame? Notre Dame's in position. They have creative blitz packages. They change up what they do. Coming off a bye, I promise you they're going to change things up. Here's where I'll say Notre Dame's susceptible. Defensive tackle spot is not a strength. They're missing Tillery inside big time. He was a big-time player a year ago. They don't have the answers on the inside. They're young at linebacker. So here's what I want to see from Georgia this week. Can they line up and pound the football? I 100% agree with that. But now, can they do what Clemson did last year and to Notre Dame in the college football playoff? Can they pound the football, make you respect it? And now can Jake Fromm take advantage of guys in the slot? Can you get safeties on wide receivers running up the middle of the field, making big-time plays like you saw to Ross, you know, at the end of the year for Clemson against Notre Dame's defense? That, to me, will be the most interesting part about it. I think Georgia, I do agree with you. I think Georgia lost a ton of weapons, and I think that we're going to find out more about those guys. But if you've been watching them in any way, shape, or form already, and you've seen George Pickens, I mean, the dude's going to be an animal. He's going to be very, very special. They've got a couple guys on the outside. I think Pickens attacks the ball better than anybody. He's got a great frame. He's a freshman. He's 6'3". He's not even 200 pounds. He's not like a big, strong guy yet, but you can tell he goes and plucks the football and makes big-time plays. Blaylock, another big body on the outside that is another young guy. Again, I'm talking about freshmen, okay? These are freshman guys, but they don't look like freshmen, Kevin. And we're going to find out now when they're physically challenged and, more importantly, mentally challenged against Notre Dame this week, will they answer the call? Because that, to me, offensively, there is no question mark. I mean, I have another question mark, but I'm talking too much. So the biggest question mark will be at wide receiver, and are they going to be guys that can consistently make plays on the outside? Because you have to bring extra pressure when you maul people like they do.
You make a great point, though, early on in this discussion about this matchup, because Notre Dame's defense against the run, they have not looked sharp, averaging they've given up over 220 yards per game since that loss to Clemson. Meanwhile, you know, Georgia's averaging nearly 300 yards per game on the ground. So we'll see what the plan of attack is for Kirby early on to maybe get Jake some looks here and then run the football often to see how Notre Dame responds on the front lines, especially at defensive tackle. We'll be back in a minute to dive into the film room with Pollock. But first, a word from Allstate, because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc., etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, and unexpected weather. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Now back to the show. Okay, you broke down a little bit of the film here, and one of the cool things I like about what we can do here on Wednesday is we get a little reaction from you on the weekend, but we can break down some film. And you're in the film room early in the week looking at a bunch of teams. Who is standing out when we talk about units? You mentioned Penn State's defense. You mentioned a little bit of Notre Dame's defense. What are you seeing in the film room from these units?
Well, Penn State's defensive front seven is the best I've seen it by far under James Franklin. And I'm talking about athleticism. They've had guys that fought and were tough, but you're talking about they got linebackers that can run. They got smart linebackers. I think Jan Johnson, number 36, really stuck out to me as a guy that he's smart, understands exactly what he's seeing, doesn't mess up at all, always in the right spot, always doing the right thing. Cam Brown, number 6. Another guy that's athletic, that's very good in the box, fast. I mean, you're talking about, they got speed, man. They will be interesting to watch with the Buckeyes. I mean, they've got Mustafa, number 97, another guy that's long, athletic, and they look different than they've ever looked. I've been watching Penn State for years, and I've been like, where's the athleticism? You know, where's these guys in the box that can really create havoc and make plays? And now you're starting to see it really, really show up, and I think it's going to be interesting to watch them against all the I immediately after I watched their front seven defensively thought the only one I would put with them right now is the Buckeyes. I mean, that's how good in the Big Ten I think their defensive front seven really is. Hyperactive, smart, play with unbelievable. Their defensive linemen, man, you go turn on the tape and they come off flat back. And that might not make sense to people, but I'm talking about they come off with their back so flat you could put a plate on it and eat off of it. Well, when you do that, now you're penetrating and you're getting in the backfield and you're blowing guys up. They're going to eat up a lot of offensive lines this season. Just super impressed with what I saw from Penn State's defensive front seven.
Oh, and they have the bye now coming off that victory against Pitt. They looked very good with the goal line stand, and now they get ready for Maryland, a Maryland team coming off that stunning loss to Temple. And when I say stunning, I'm saying it because of how the offense, you know, the first 2 weeks looked fantastic, and then they were stopped inside the goal line 8 times, and they walked away with 0 points.
I'm about to say, the red zone and banged up on the offensive line, by the way. So that will be an interesting spot to watch because they're not – particularly deep, but they'll figure that. And I think Josh Jackson becomes more of a part of the offense in that aspect because he's a big, strong kid that can run too. They got to find a way to use that.
He has to figure it out because Temple was in that backfield the entire game, and Josh took a ton of hits from that front four with Temple. And the Owls look really good in a contest like that. So Penn State and Maryland coming off those byes, we'll see them next week. All right, this is also another chance, not just to talk about the units, but this is a chance for you to also talk about players that you think that are under the radar that we will be talking about soon, and we could be talking about Saturday night. Who's that one guy this week we should keep an eye on?
Boy, when you turn on the tape, Kevin, and you watch number 4, an outside linebacker for the University of Georgia. His name's Nolan Smith. This dude is an adult. I mean, he is a grown up. And it's not just the size and speed because he has that. He's got heavy physical hands. Like this dude, for a freshman, I mean, I've seen him bull rush multiple guys this season and not nudge him backwards. I'm talking about flat on your back, boy. Like, have a seat, baptism in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. I mean, it was unbelievable. And more importantly, his mentality. Dude, he chases the ball wherever it goes. You can tell he loves the game. Nolan Smith, number 4, outside linebacker. If Georgia's going to win a national championship, which I think they're going to have a good chance of doing, there's a lot of guys we've talked about with Adam Anderson and there's a ton of guys that have been at Georgia over the last several years that have had big-time potential. This guy right here, I think, is going to have a chance to be super, super special. And you'll see him prime time against Notre Dame, because even though it's the third week of the season and he hadn't played a ton, or fourth week of the season, he's going to be very much a part of the game plan.
Also, you notice that the sacks have been up for Georgia. What are you seeing from the entire unit here defensively?
Yeah, when you say up, I mean, that's an understatement. When you talk about Georgia the last couple years, they've had guys that could kind of rush the passer. But now they have dudes that can rush the passer. And the whole game, for them has changed. By the way, they have literally, right now at this point in the season, half of the amount of sacks they had a year ago. Half.
Yeah. So, yeah, right, that now means they got 12. They got 12 in the first three, and last year they had, what, 24 through 14 games?
24 total.
When you're talking about Georgia to have only 24 sacks last year, what's been the difference here on that big jump here?
Well, there's a couple reasons for it that make this group – well, first of all, you feel more aggressive when you blitz, and you feel better about your team when you know you can cover. And Georgia does not have DeAndre Baker, and they are not as good in the secondary when you lose a guy like that. But I'll say this, they got 4 to 6 corners that could start for most teams in college football. That's how good and deep they are. What does that mean? Now I can be more aggressive. I can bring more pressure. I mean, they're going to pressure more than you've seen them. And it's also because of guys like Nolan Smith that I told you about. Like, they've got Watt. They've got tons of guys up front now that can get after the quarterback, and you're going to continue to see them grow and continue to see them play more guys that they rotate through. But you're talking about having 3, 4, 5 guys now that can get after the quarterback, make life difficult. Not only that, tackles for a losses. They're a third of the way where they were a year ago for that. And you know how that important that is. Second and, you know, 13 as opposed to 2nd and 7 or 2nd and 8. It just, you dictate to the offense now, and you dictate situational football in such a better way. If you're going to win a national title, the one thing you've seen 1,000% in the playoff era that holds true no matter what, and this is why I think Georgia has a good chance to win a national title, if you get tackles for a loss and sacks, those are the numbers defensively that absolutely, if you haven't been in the top 5 in the country, you don't win a national championship. And Georgia's going to be a team now. They're already in the top 5 in those categories. And if they continue to grow with some of their young guys that are continuing to play more, like I told you about with Nolan Smith and Anderson, and they're going to continue to grow, get better, and they continue to put more pressure on the quarterback, it's going to be scary.
After this game, the way Georgia plays, let's just say hypothetically, they win this game by double digits. Are we underselling the Georgia Bulldogs in their ranking, considering what they do, what they look like, and the two teams in front of them and who they have played?
I think this is always an interesting conversation for me, because I always tell people, who gives a crap? Like, what does it really matter right now? It doesn't. Like, listen, it matters for the podcast, and we don't talk. It doesn't matter right now if you're 4. It doesn't matter right now if you're 5. You win all your games and take care of your business, you're going to be right where you need to be.
It doesn't matter to me, because it's in September. It clearly doesn't matter to you, but it matters to fan bases. It matters to fan bases that like to talk and that like to have, you know, the barbershop conversations, or, you know, in the bar, in the diner, on message boards. It's a big deal to people, especially when you look at Georgia and how they feel and how they look at, hey, who's Alabama played? What have they done so far? And Clemson hasn't looked like the Clemson we were expecting. Like, there is a chip on a lot of people's
shoulders. I know, Kevin. Clemson's offense last week, Clemson's offense last week really sucked. And
I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
I didn't say you did. Just listen. Give me a second. I'm saying all the message boards and everybody's upset, and Clemson's offense, something, Trevor Lawrence doesn't look right. 600 yards later and 41 points. I know we're kind of numb because we expect it to be so perfect, because Trevor Lawrence was, you know, perfect, kind of perfect a year ago, but 600 yards is a good day at the office. 40 points is a good day at the office. It's going to continue to happen for this team. And so I get it. I understand what you're saying, and it's something people talk about. But here's the thing. Debate it. Debate it all you want. Every week it should be. By the way, I would be a fluid poll every single week. What LSU did a couple weeks ago against Texas, it mattered to me. LSU should move way up. They've had a significant challenge. They should move way up. Georgia, when they have a significant challenge against Notre Dame, a top 10 team, you beat the brakes off of them, you take care of the business. Well, first thing that's going to happen is, Notre Dame's overrated, because that's the conversation we're going to have. But you earn something like that, you earn more points. Because, yeah, Bama hasn't played. Duke is not a strength of schedule. Sorry, bro. It's not. I mean, right now up until this point, Clemson, who have they played? They haven't played anybody. Who are they going to play all year, really? They played Texas A&M, so you give credit for that. But I'm saying the rest of the way, when you look at Clemson, good Lord, I mean, they're in the, you can put them in the college football playoff now, tomorrow, today, whenever, like right now, whenever you want to, they're in.
Yeah.
It's the easiest path in the history of college football.
Yeah, especially the disappointment that I think all of us had some expectations with Syracuse, but they haven't started the way we thought. We thought this game, you know, week three was going to be a contest, but, you know, Brett Venables made sure that no one was discussing Texas A&M or Syracuse because his defense made the jump. I think his defense has been fantastic while we've been waiting for Trevor Lawrence to give us a Trevor Lawrence game, but we often forget that he hasn't played a full season yet as a starting quarterback in college football, and the kid's a true sophomore, so that takes some time. I bring that up because I think it's going to be a huge discussion if Georgia does what we expect to see from Georgia on Saturday night. I think Sunday morning it'll be a discussion on, hey, are we sure that Georgia's the number three team in the land, or maybe they should be considered at least number two right behind Clemson and jumping over Alabama, considering who we've seen Alabama play to start the season. Before I let you go on this podcast here on Wednesday, I want to know one thing. Game day is going to be there. Notre Dame and their fan base, they travel well. Give me something in Athens where if I was going to Athens this weekend, I should look forward to seeing outside of watching football.
I'm so bad at this, Kevin. I don't have a life in the outside of family football.
Okay, outside of going to David Pollack's house, where should, like, is yeah, there, is there
over,
a place
bro.
To go? Is there like a venue? Is there anything that stands out in your mind that you've heard people tell you about in Athens?
Well, I mean, downtown Athens is a cool place because it's very, whatever you're into, it has. I mean, if you want to go to the bars, you can go to the bars. If you want to go hear all kinds of different kinds of music, you can hear different kinds of music. It's one of the cleanest, most diverse cities I've seen. You can find whatever you want to get in. You want good food? There's good food. You can go to Five Bar. You can go to different restaurants, you know, downtown, and you can really get into whatever you want to get into. That's the good thing about Athens. It's small enough, but it's also got a variety of everything possible.
All right, man. I look forward to it. As you mentioned, home game for you in Athens. Game day is going to be there. We're going to talk Friday and break down the top games of week four. We'll be back in a minute with Ivan Maisel, but first a word from LinkedIn. Building a winning team is all about finding the right people for the job. That's why college scouts all over the country spend so much time recruiting players they need on the field. And when it comes to hiring for your business, there's no better tool than LinkedIn. Personally, I love to connect with old colleagues on LinkedIn. Over 600 million members visit LinkedIn to make connections, learn and grow as professionals, and discover new job opportunities. That's how they make sure your job post gets in front of the people with the right hard skills and soft skills to meet your role requirements. Things like collaboration, work ethic, adaptability. LinkedIn does the legwork to match you to the most qualified candidates so you can focus on hiring the person who will transform your business. To get $50 off your first job post, go to linkedin.com/campus. Again, that's linkedin.com/campus to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. By the way, I want to remind everyone for Monday, our loyal listeners can submit questions that Herbie will answer on the next podcast. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your questions, and the best questions will make the air. Now let's go to our conversation with Ivan. As he does every Wednesday, great to have Ivan Maisel join us here on the College Football Podcast. And Alabama faces Southern Miss this weekend. They're 38.5-point favorites, and no one's really talking about that matchup or the spread. Much was made, though, at the start of the season about the Tide being beat up with injuries on the defensive side of the ball, especially at linebacker. And Nick Saban announcing earlier this week that defensive end, who was a preseason All-SEC selection, he's going to miss this coming weekend's game against Southern Miss. And Ivan, when you had the chance to watch Alabama against South Carolina, you walked away a little concerned about where that defense is. What are you seeing so far?
And it was partially good news. I mean, the nagging problem with LeBryan Ray is it's a foot injury that he had, and he had a foot injury last year, and sometimes those are, you know, they don't go away very easily. So that's a long-term concern. But what I saw Saturday, Kevin, was a defense that was struggling. South Carolina moved the ball a lot between the 10-yard lines, and to Alabama's credit, they bowed up at in the red zone. But 31 first downs for South Carolina, 459 yards. Ryan Helinski, playing his second college game, throws for 357. And, some of those throws were he was threading a really small needle. You're like, oh, my God, don't throw. Oh, wow, good play, I think there's some concern for the reasons, you pointed out. The preseason loss of their two best linebackers, or two of their best. I mean, certainly mm-hmm. Dylan Moses was the quarterback of the defense, and Josh McMillan, a veteran presence in the middle. I don't think they're playing that sort, the sort of national championship caliber defense. And it's mid-September, and I understand that. But they didn't play good defense at the end of last season, and to come out of the gate this year, not playing A-plus defense, my eyebrows are up. And again, as you point out, not so curious about Southern Miss, but you got A&M in 2 weeks, and that's they need to get better.
Now, I think that there's the skeptics at home saying, oh, well, then just go to the depth chart, insert a 4-star, 5-star guy. They're not losing a lot of talent. But I don't think people understand what you're losing is experience. You're putting in a lot of young guys in these environments, in these situations. The only benefit for them is, like you said, they've got a couple more weeks before A&M. They have about a month and a half before LSU. And so with that, they get that experience in the reps. But that this has to be a red flag right now for Saban.
Well, and he's certainly aware of it. I mean, he's talked about it, but there's what can he do about it? I mean, he's playing freshman, and as much as we've all marveled at how quickly freshman quarterbacks are adapting to college football these days, I don't think you see freshman defenders adapt quite as quickly, and I don't know why that is. I'm not smart enough to know why that is, and I haven't asked anybody who is smart enough. But I mean, DJ Dale, the nose guard for Alabama, has looked remarkably good for a freshman, and he has stepped right into the lineup. But this is, other than in those key spots in the middle, this is a fairly experienced defense. So if they can just shore up, I'm sure it's not much, to flip those issues. And you just wonder, between that, it's a new defensive staff, even though Saban, as we all know, is the real defensive coordinator of that staff, but and always has been. But I don't know. My antenna are up. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, the one thing, too, with the benefit of the schedule is they do have a bye before facing Jimbo on the road, A&M, on October 12th. That's going to be a huge weekend, of course, because there's so many storylines. And the one thing that stands out to me is, and when you look at the October 12th weekend, is, of course, at the Cotton Bowl, and that's Texas and Oklahoma. We'll be back in a minute with Ivan to talk about the surprise teams in the ACC and the Pac-12. But first, a word from DraftKings. Let me ask you, is anything better than watching football? Of course there is. Watching football with the DraftKings lineup on the line, especially this week. DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you sign up with my code ESPNCFP. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch means much more with the DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Plus, all new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million in prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use code ESPNCFP. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. New users, don't forget to enter our code ESPNCFP to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code ESPNCFP only at DraftKings. A minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Now back to the show. By that time, Clemson's going to be just rolling along because the way the schedule is set up, it feels like they're downhill from here on out after their victory against Syracuse. And they are the number one team in the country. They're everything that is right about the ACC. And we're talking about a conference that went through a really bad, bad weekend here. But outside of Clemson and outside of some of those struggles with the group here in the ACC, there's Virginia. And Virginia comes in entering week four undefeated. What's your impression of what Bronco is doing right now?
Well, you know, I have to admit, Kevin, I was absolutely mystified, A, that Bronco Mendenhall would leave BYU for UVA, and B, that UVA would find Bronco Mendenhall and think he was the right guy to come all the way across the country. But I've really been impressed with the way they have steadily improved. And, you know, they had to hang on against Florida State, and it wasn't the prettiest hanging on that you've ever seen, but you know, they overcame their mistakes late. They overcame the missed extra point late. And they're playing really good defense. They're playing terrific keep away on offense. You know, they had the ball almost 40 minutes against Florida State. And, you know, that's kind of old school football these days, to play time of possession. It's something, you know, David Shaw has done so well at Stanford for a while. But he's got a nice quarterback in Bryce Perkins. And I don't know. I mean, I kind of think this is a team that's worth keeping an eye on. You know, they're the only undefeated team left in the Coastal, which might be damning them with faint praise. But, you know, and we'll find out about them soon enough. I mean, they got Old Dominion this week, and Old Dominion has risen up and beaten people before, but you know, they catch Notre Dame the week after Georgia. They go to South Bend next week. You know, what kind of shape will Notre Dame be in physically and emotionally after the spectacle of Saturday night, where, as Mark Schlabaugh reported today, you know, the tickets are averaging over $600 a pop, by the way. And then they got a big game after an off week of Notre Dame at Miami. So I guess, you know, by mid-October, we'll know, but this is a team that could really go a long way towards sewing up the Coastal relatively soon.
And keep this in mind, the last time Virginia started 4-0, you got to go back to 2004. It's been a while, so
yeah,
they are quietly under the radar. And as you set up there, that matchup against Notre Dame, you got to circle it, especially when you look at Notre Dame's schedule and who they have to play. And you're not scared so much of what in the past, they've got Stanford. Maybe you're not scared of USC just because what they're dealing with a true freshman quarterback. And this could be, outside of this game against Georgia, their biggest test on the schedule for the Irish. I'm not knocking Michigan. I'm just saying right now, currently, where things are with Virginia and who they are and what they're doing. Let's transition here too, because you see similar qualities here, what Virginia is doing in the ACC over in the Pac-12 with the team. What stands out?
Well, Cal, Cal is 3-0 again under Justin Wilcox, but it just feels a little different this year. You know, they stole a game at UW. That I think just ended a few minutes ago. We played deep into the night in Seattle a couple of weeks ago. But the Cal's playing good defense, which you would expect from Wilcox, and we're all waiting to see whether they can, you know, they go to Ole Miss this week. It's an 11 o'clock local time kickoff, 9 o'clock Pacific time, and that's always a huge trap for West Coast teams, and we're all just scared to death that the poor Bears will melt in the heat of the Southeast. I did look up the weather for Saturday. It's the forecast in Oxford, Kevin, is 88 and partly cloudy, and that could be pretty bad because the forecast in Berkeley for Saturday is 83 and sunny. So it's a really big difference.
Got to check the humidity index, though.
Yeah, well, that's where it'll be.
Everybody's hydrating, right?
Well, if we're gonna go there today, the humidity in Oxford is 34%, and in Berkeley it's 88%. So I'm just saying, maybe we're overthinking this a little bit.
We'll see. I like that Cal defense is really impressive, and when you're talking about a conference that's trying to find some identity here and try and figure things out after some early losses to, you know, some of the powers at the top and with Washington and Oregon, and you're hanging your hat potentially on Utah and Arizona State, and don't sleep on what the Bears are doing right now. Switching subjects, no easy segue here to talk about a Hall of Fame coach who passed away last weekend, and that's John Ralston, and he was 92 years old, and when you look back through the years, it's what he did at Stanford and what he did at San Jose State. And you wanted to share some thoughts here, Ivan.
Well, it is one of my favorite anecdotes regarding recruiting has to do with John Ralston. And, of course, he was at Stanford 50 years ago. He was the coach when Stanford went to back-to-back Rose Bowls in 1970 and 71. And years ago, the beloved director of admissions at Stanford, a guy named Fred Hargadon, was telling a story, and he said that which I happened to hear him tell, that the only coach in his career that ever tried to bribe him was John Ralston. And, you know, and so he says that, and everybody sits up in their chair a little bit, and the bribe was a ham sandwich. He said Ralston would call him, and Ralston was an relentlessly upbeat guy, you know, just the Norman Vincent Peale. People used to call him Mr. Positive. And he said that Ralston would call him and say, "Fred, I'm coming over at noon to talk about, you know, recruits. What kind of sandwich would you like?" You know, and ham and cheese, John. You know, so he said he had in mind one particular player, and he said, you know, he lays him out, and I've never been able to pin down who the player was. Some people think it was Russell White, who, of course, was an All-American at Cal in the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. And he lays him, you know, he lays out his credentials, and Fred Hargadon just looked at Ralston and said, "Yeah, that's not going to happen, John." And, you know, and Ralston said, "Well, okay, Fred, we're going to see him in our backfield one way or the other. He's going to either play for us or run through us." And so, I just love that story. Yeah, and sure enough, he ran right through him. He ran through a lot of people.
Great story, and he's got such an interesting background, his experience. I mean, 5 seasons coaching the Broncos. He had some experience with the USFL. He's with the Eagles, the 49ers front office, the Netherlands national team. So you could tell wherever he was at, he was going to find a way to coach or be around a football team, and it could be in another country, it could be in another league, it could be also in great USFL.
And, you know, he was part of that generation that did a lot of shuttling back and forth between Cal and Stanford. That, you know, Bill Walsh was one of those guys, Jim Mora. There were a lot of guys that went back and forth across the bay. And, you know, if you did that in some rivalries, nobody would ever forgive you. But at Cal and Stanford, it's never really been an issue. There's been constant travel back and forth from one school to the other.
Ivan, that's fascinating you share that story there. Why isn't it an issue considering that it is a rivalry? Why was that okay?
I don't know. I think it in part it speaks to the, you know, the heat of the rivalry. I mean, and they think and it is a heated rivalry, but you know, they know how to live with one another in a way that in Alabama, yeah, and Auburn people live together, but it's just the heat of the rivalry is not quite the same. And and I think it also speaks to the importance of college football in the Bay Area as opposed to the state of Alabama or the state of Mississippi or the state of Texas, you know, where there are rivalries that people don't forgive one another. And, you know, that's, it's just, there's just always been a sort of a cross-pollination between the two schools, and I don't really know why.
It's fascinating. It's just fascinating. You could have a rivalry the way it is, like you mentioned, and still have a heated rivalry, but certain things are okay and allowed and respected. Tomorrow night, pretty cool thing as we continue to celebrate 150 years of college football with the greatest show. To me, I can't wait to watch this just because it's the Innovations episode on ESPN at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. What exactly is the Innovations show? Because I'm that tease is enough for me, but for our audience, what exactly does that mean?
Well, yeah, the format of the greatest show, Kevin, is that it's 11 of your best buddies from ESPN, myself included, who we sit around and debate the greatest fill in the blank of a particular aspect of a game, and it's always related to the American Game episode of the week. And the American Game episode that aired last night was the evolution of the game and how the game has changed over the course of 150 years in various, you know, from equipment to offenses and defenses to rules. So Innovations was a way to tie that in to the evolution of the game. And, you know, we look at innovations on the field. We look at innovations in equipment. We look at innovations in rules. And then we pick the top 11. And the fun part, and I don't know how many people saw the first greatest episode last week with mascots. If we could see a show of hands of everybody now. Who saw it? You know, the 11 of us have a lot of fun, and there's a lot of kidding back and forth, and sometimes it gets emotional when we talk about certain subjects, and it's a nice way to illustrate how the game has changed and grown over 150 years.
Can't wait to watch it. Once again, a reminder, the episode, the Innovations episode is on ESPN 7 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow night, right after the 6 p.m. Sports Center. Ivan, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us here on the podcast.
And that would be the 6 p.m. Sports Center co-hosted by Kevin Nagandi.
Appreciate the plug, Ivan.
All right, we'll talk next week.
Take care. Appreciate Ivan and Pollock for joining us here. Looking forward to Friday. Pollock's going to break down the top games from week four, including Notre Dame at Georgia, Auburn at A&M, Michigan at Wisconsin. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate, LinkedIn, and DraftKings. Next week, our loyal listeners, you guys can submit questions that Herbie will answer on Monday. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your questions, and the best questions will make the air, and Herbie will provide the answers. Also, a big thanks to our producer, Gabe Bassain. Gabe's holding it down as I continue to battle this cold, so thank you for dealing with me. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And, of course, remember, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it.